Thanks for getting up in the morning. So this talk is going to be about like a brief introduction to some stuff I've been doing with waterfalls in video games. It's currently my biggest unfinished project right now, other than Laid Out. That's a video game about waterfalls. The premise of the game is there's some kind of vaguely far future post-apocalypse where global warming has made the land bare, soils depleted, and you have to figure out how to restart waterfalls and other waterways to jumpstart ecosystems and perform soil remediation. I live in the Pacific Northwest of the United States, where I currently have tons of places to go to gather source photos for waterfalls. There's all kinds of waterfalls in all kinds of circumstances. There's multi-tier stuff, ones that get completely overloaded by tourists, ones that's like doing a tango or something. The one over there has a tunnel that's blasted through the rock behind the waterfall, built into the 1930s as a jobs program. Why can't we do that these days instead of what we're currently doing? Other waterfalls that hug rocks really closely, others that cascade across rocks and flows split, and lots of plunge pools. It's always fun to have waterfalls that you could walk behind. Waterfalls also change throughout the year. This is the same waterfall, just at different times. The volume of the water changes dramatically depending on snowpack for the year, whether it's been raining recently. And this is a map of that I've been making slowly over the last few years of the Columbia River Gorge right next to Portland. This is the Columbia River kind of goes out to the ocean. Portland's kind of down in this corner. It's only like a half an hour drive to get here. The markers in here are waterfalls that I visited and photographed. The gorge itself is about 50 miles, 80 kilometers. Each marker is a waterfall. Every time I think I've seen all the waterfalls along the gorge, I go to this other list, Waterfalls Northwest, and there's like so many other waterfalls. There's just so much fancy mountains and water carving through the landscape. And this is the Oregon side. This particular website, it doesn't let you display everything in an area. You have to view state by state. That's why it's too slight. It kind of blows my mind how rich the geology is. I've lived there in the region for like 30 years and only had discovered many of these in the last couple of years. On the subject of waterfall lists, the Northwest Waterfall Survey is kind of a spin-off of the World Waterfall Database. It does not appear you can just download their data, so it's not fully open data set. You have to click through their map. It's pretty thorough, but you might see some, like for development purposes, it's using the Google Maps API, which is I wish they would use a full open source stack to kind of get away from that. There is a database freely available with just data about waterfalls that you can transform in various ways from the United States Geological Survey. That list is pretty thorough, but it's only for the United States, and it has so far not been wiped out by the government, but you never know, the day is young. These larger maps are inspiring me not just to do more hiking and make artwork from it, but also make it clear that I need to make an illustrated map of the region. This was not me, of course. It's from 1300 AD of what people used to think the world was like. If I were to make an illustrated Columbia Gorge, it could be used as like a mini map in the video game. I wish that fanciful maps were more common, ones that are not strictly like geographically accurate. Sometimes thorough data just really kills a good story. I like that both exist. I just personally want to see more experiential maps of the world. I like weirder versions of cartoon maps you might see at tourist spots. I was hoping to have such an animated or such an illustrated map to show for LGM, but like there's so many little to-do marks I didn't quite get done. Many of the parks where these waterfalls exist are now under attack by politicians in my country that want to log the surrounding areas for a short-term profit. It's really depressing. So the premise of my video game is not so far-fetched anymore. I used to joke that the artwork I sell, prices go up when society collapses, so prices are going to go up, it's looking like. In trying to fight against that, I'm trying to collect and or build tools that help map out and record ecosystems and how people interact with the land and wildlife, especially in wild areas under threat of destruction. And as an artist, my particular spin would, I want to help make tools that make it somehow engaging to make sense of all that data. This is part of what's at least motivating my waterfall stuff. Anyway, back to less depressing project details. All the photos and hiking experiences I have has accumulated a huge baseline for what should be renderable as a waterfall. like refraction if you have sheets of water, different layers for tiers, splash zones on a base, rippling water, mist. If you up in the corner, small bags of dog poop that tigers just leave behind for some reason. It's pretty common on a lot of trails. To model these things realistically in computers require complicated math that generally takes a lot of computation and often results in terrible frame rate. To do this and be viewable from different angles at a decent frame rate is a very difficult task. Fortunately, video game design as a practice is mostly about finding shortcuts and really horrible hacks that look okay in context without having to construct a whole reality simulator. Many video game programmers start out wanting to let the physics engine control how players interact in an environment completely, but physics engines glitch out so much that many programmers end up faking the physics for a more trustworthy gaming experience. Even like big AAA games, there's kind of limited physics, and like I see that if you watch a lot of developer videos, they often tell a similar story. It's the physics was great, but it's just too many problems, and it'd be great for speedrunners, but and for a reliable experience, it's a lot of trouble usually. Another thing about video games is that you don't have to stick to a completely realistic appearance. If you pick a particular art style and stick to it, you can hide all kinds of stuff that would otherwise stand way out. To that end, initially I take my photos from nature and process them with some combination of Darktable and GIMP. A lot of work setting up seamless textures, in particular, for water, or just use the photos for sources for 3D modeling for terrain and stuff. So this is an example of the easiest form of a video game waterfall. It's just a single mesh that we'll add scrolling to in a minute. You just take a flat plane, bend it around. I just did that in Blender and import as GLB. In Godot, the standard shader, you can set up like things that don't move. It just has a particular way of reflecting light and a particular color, but it doesn't move with time. For that, generally, you'd need to convert it to shader. You can set up basic reflectivity. You can set up the basic material settings in the inspector and then convert that standard material into a shader. It's difficult to go in reverse if you change your mind and you want your shader to become a standard material. That's harder, but you can make a shader very easily. It's just a single menu item, and then it creates code to represent that actual standard material. So here, the water is now scrolling, because the mesh has a UV coordinate, an X and Y coordinate. So this is literally just adding a line to make the Y coordinate literally depend on time. And you can add other factors like the rate of flow and transparency. You can grab the color and translate it into some kind of transparency for water. Like standard materials, particle systems in Godot, you can do a similar thing. You can particles have like a million little things you can tweak, but often that doesn't quite cut it. So you can do the same thing as materials. You can take the particle system, the standard particles, and convert it into a particle shader, and then work at a lower level to do weird stuff to it. For instance, you can nudge particles around. This one is particles converted into a shader, and then having it map along a Bezier path. If you rely on standard, like normal physics, sometimes the physics will not quite fit to your particular circumstances, but if you have more fine-grained control of here is exactly the path that I wanted to go, and play with the handles to simulate like things getting faster down at the bottom, it's pretty easy to set up that to do with shader coding. So scrolling textures and meshes are the basic building blocks of layering up waterfalls. Most video games, even like $300 million budget video games, they use some combination of those things, plus highly skilled environment artists. In any case, manually building up waterfalls takes a long time, even with highly skilled environment artists. Instead of going back to Blender each time to set up a new environment, build a mesh, export it, import it, mess with materials and shaders and whatnot, it'd be nice to have a tool to do that automatically, which is kind of finally what I'm working on. Godot has many ways to do tool scripting. Other software can really learn from providing a wide variety of methods to do tool scripting. Godot has one-off scripts, like you have an object selected, you run a script and it does stuff. There's tool scripts that live on objects with extra hinting for inspector things, like a new feature is a button in the inspector so you can push it and perform certain actions to make it rotate or whatever. Other tool scripts that operate in real time, so you can have things spin around in the editor without actually running a game to see how things are going to behave. You can add 2D overlays, docs, menus within docs, whole new tabs, whole new sections of screens. Having this abundant flexibility is great for extending core functionality. No set of developers is ever going to anticipate how a whole world of users will want to use their software, and providing numerous well-documented methods of customization is really helpful for artists. For WaterTool, I've been using a combination of these things as an add-on. Add-ons in Godot let you install a bunch of different things and install menu items and stuff. Uninstalling is a little more problematic. Usually you just have to delete the whole thing and then reinstall it. It's the uninstall process for add-ons could be a little more pleasant. I currently have two add-ons in the Godot asset library. It's like it has an actual dedicated tab in the Godot engine, so you can just immediately go online and select a bunch of stuff. So this thing uses a kind of a hack in the Godot editor where you can turn on the physics engine, which normally only runs when you're running the game. But in code, you can say, all right, I want physics now, and then drop a bunch of rocks around. It's very hacky. I hope they don't remove that feature someday, but you can do very easy to set up big piles of rocks. It's kind of dangerous to turn on physics in the editor. So if you have like a character that's based on physics and or things that might fall over, you turn on physics and your character's gonna like ragdoll off the edge and fall down to infinity. And there's not really good undo recovery in that case. So it's gotta watch out for these pitfalls. So back to waterfalls. The first method I tried for procedurally generating a waterfall is with rigid body 3Ds, which is basically a full physics engine controlled ball. And it's just turning on physics and then letting balls roll around and then connecting a mesh between the paths that the balls make. It's kind of fun to watch, but if you want to iterate, it takes forever to just watch things go. After like two or three times of watching the balls fall over, it gets kind of boring. So you want to be able to edit quickly. So I sort of abandoned that method. There's another physics object in Godot called the character body, which interacts with other physics objects like rigid bodies, but the actual trajectory and orientation of character bodies is controlled by the user. But the important point with it is that you can set up a velocity of a character body, and then you can iterate that as many times as you want per frame. So it's not actually dependent on the physics engine's concept of time passing. So you can do it as much as your computer processor allows, which makes for a much faster iterating than using rigid body. This method works pretty well, but I need to do some optimizing. There's some uncomfortable lag in how I'm displaying the actual paths. It's a little slow. And also, you can see in here the paths like get really wildly different with really adjacent paths. I think that's partly due to in rendering stuff, that's different than the colliding with stuff. If you render something smooth, everything like merges onto adjacent polygons, but in a collider, you have really sharp edges. So if you have something bounce off of one edge, it might bounce up, and if you bounce right next to it, it might bounce in a wildly different direction. So my next iteration of this tool, another thing I didn't quite get done in time for today, is to make a manual raycasting thing to, like, instead of the character body, this thing is based on a sphere and you're pushing it around, but if you start with a point and then just raycast and then scan a few rays, there's less computation involved in that, so it should be a little faster, and I can sample adjacent areas and get kind of an average of how things are going to bounce to kind of simulate the visual smoothness, and hopefully that'll smooth out how paths are determined as you roll the water balloons around. Another consideration for dropping balls around is where they go. So if you just drag a line with the mouse along, if the waterfall is the type that hugs the rocks, usually that's fine because it'll spawn a ball right on top. But rivers have depth to them. So if you do that, you make a really a big dip in the middle. So the second mode is this, where you start dragging, and it spawns water balloons kind of along the path from this, your starting point and ending point, and it samples from the middle of the path for the direction that water is supposed to be flowing. And throwing balls off cliffs is great, but there's still a bunch of steps you have to do to have a full waterfall. This shows the current settings that you can do for waterfalls in my tool at the moment. This is about 95% more little boxes that I actually want to be fiddling with. I would prefer to transfer these things to like strange on-screen widgets, but those things take quite a long time to program. Then building up waterfalls can be pretty important to get a good effect. So there's numerous different layers that you can apply in this tool. One is that one mesh that connects all of the paths. Another is each of the paths has a little mesh that goes along like a little fan. So each droplet has a little fan that kind of weaves in and out based on shader displacement of vertices. I first saw that technique from an incredible waterfall tutorial by Ghislaine Girardeau. Apologies for probably mispronouncing his name, except his tool is for Unreal Engine, and I have not found an equivalent way to do it in Godot, so that's kind of has inspired that particular method of layering. One thing about having multiple layers is transparency issues, because if you have two transparent layers, it really matters what order you render them in, especially if the layers are going through each other. If you move around, it's a little subtle, but if you move the camera around on the far side, that's the default usually is blend mix mode. Godot has some control for how things are blended, not nearly as much as Inkscape or Krita or GIMP or whatever. But I mainly just use one of these two for the waterfalls. If you're far enough away, you can set the render priority for layers. So if you don't get close enough, then you can get away with saying, okay, this one draws first and the next one draws later. But if you have things weaving in and out, then it's difficult to say which one is technically closer than the other. A lot of video games have like tricks to restrict how you're able to view things, especially like some games don't let you look straight up because often there's a panoramic texture and it gets all bunched up on top. So the trick is, well, okay, you just can't look at the errors that are rendering artifacts. So it's a similar thing with transparency. The blend add way is just adding color to a scene. So in that case, it doesn't matter which order you render the transparency. So that's about how water is falling. There's other options for what happens when water hits a pool. In this case, the paths hit the bottom, and then that each path kind of traces out a line down at the bottom, and then that line can then be processed for, like this particular version is making a mesh with rays emanating perpendicular to the path, and then having the UV coordinates scroll along that direction. It's a pretty easy way to get some stuff moving out. Other options would be doing particle systems for that. Flow maps are a great method for doing water things also. A flow map takes a water texture and a direction texture, basically a normal map, and will sample a couple of times with inner texture based on a normal map, and then blends those together over a length of time. So you can get a lot of mileage out of just one small, simple geometry and do lots of stuff with it. That's a quick overview of the tool at the moment. There's a lot of refinement to do, like audio in games is really important. I need to also kind of combine it with rivers and have it automatically detect if something's flat, then render it like a river, otherwise render it like a waterfall, and lots of other stuff to go with that. My intention is to collect this tool with some other procedural generation stuff that I'm doing. Like this is a vegetation demo. And kind of combine it into a traversable world that teaches you how to make these techniques, like divert you to tutorials or have direct links to set up, things like that. Fred and I back home are working on that concept of making a video game that teaches you how to make video games. we both have this defect of we love to work on new tools without perfecting our old tools. So we have a lot of pieces, but not quite in a coherent whole yet. And this is a kind of an incomplete level demonstrating the use of the tool. It's a Mixamo character. It's not quite open source. It's like a placeholder. So this would be my demo going forward. And I guess that's it. Thanks for listening.
No. Thank you. Thanks for the mic. One question, one very quick one. Anyone? None. Perfect. So you have the lunch break to take all the long questions that are not coming up right now, and we'll immediately hand over to the next speaker.